Did the U.S. government ever try to employ mobsters to take out Fidel Castro? Well, my guest tonight, Thomas Mayer, seems to think so. And boy, does he have a story to tell. We'll be right back.
Grab your popcorn and snacks. Find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night to some of you guys. My name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. Welcome to California Haunts Radio. California Haunts Radio, we've been on the air for more than 14 years. And, I'm real proud of that. And we're growing. We keep growing. We're growing even more. You know, our numbers are probably exceed, as far as our download numbers over at the RSS feed, we're going to exceed what we got last month in downloads. So I'm so excited about that stuff. I keep getting these S's going. S's. If I put one of those things up here, you'll never see my face. It'll be one big blue thing here, you know, right under my face. Anyway, to block those S's. Anyway, again, my name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. I'm also the owner of the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team, based out of Sacramento, California. We are 45 strong up and down the state, which means if you think you have a paranormal problem, we can help you out. It might take us a couple of days to get out there, but we can definitely help you out. In the event that it takes a couple of days for us to get out there, we do have mediums on staff who can phone you and talk to you about what may or may not be going on at your residence or business. And in most cases, if it is paranormal, they can calm the energy down until we get back out, until we can get out there. But we always get out there. Like I said, we have people all over California, Nevada, Washington, Hawaii, you name it, we can get there. Arizona. That being said, if you're watching from Facebook tonight, and there's going to be some changes on Facebook, that be sure to watch Friday's show, because we have to have a sit-down chat about Facebook, and I got to let you know what's going on over there and what just happened with Facebook. So at least tonight until Friday, we're going to be broadcasting live on Facebook. That's going to change. Okay, if you are watching from Facebook, and a lot of you are tonight, please feel free to hit that follow button. We're always looking for followers. And during the show, feel free to chat in the chat room. I will try to read your comments as much as I can. I don't have fancy producers with me, so it's just little old me doing this stuff with my old blind eyes. So I will make it a point to try to get your comments and everything. Also, if you like what you see and hear tonight, feel free to give us a thumbs up, give me a happy heart, smiley faces, whatever you can do, okay? Because what that does, by participating in the chat room, by giving us happy faces and all that, that puts us up higher in Facebook's FYP, which is the For You page. And then what that means is that we get distributed out to more people, right? Because it's all about sharing. It's all about word of mouth. It's all about sharing with these shows. So if you can do that stuff, that would be great. YouTube. We have more than 1,000 videos over there, all of this show. All of this show, the last 4 years of this show. I'm really proud of it. And if you're watching from there tonight and you like what you see, please give us a thumbs up. You know, same process. All the social media places work the same, right? Basically. They have different little icons and things that they do. You can give us a thumbs up over YouTube. You can give us a smiley face, however that works for you. And again, chat in the chat room. Again, that'll put us up into YouTube's FYP. And if you haven't subscribed, be sure to do that. In those 1,000 videos, I'm a journalist. That's what I do for a living. Okay? I'm a photojournalist. I love to cover other stuff other than paranormal. Tonight's a perfect example of that. Okay? So I like to mix it up. So what I've done is I've gone through, and because it's confusing as hell when you get over to YouTube, but I've started to categorize everything. So true crime will go into the true crime file. If you like me and Nancy Matt, she's got her own file. Cryptids, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That way, when you go in, click on that particular folder, and you can see all the shows that have been done in that mode. You can pick and choose what you want to see on playback, right? So, yeah. All right, and I want to thank you guys for being here. Twitch, we're broadcasting from Twitch tonight. Same rules, thumbs up, all that good stuff, comment, and that'll help me out. And if you are at home and there's other people in the house and you guys, you've been following the show for a while. Well, ask them to join you. You know, that doesn't hurt. Say, hey, there's this little show out of Sacramento, and it's not too bad. Come on and watch it. And that's the way we did this. You know, my sister's the one that inspired me when I first started doing this show in this format, because I was on Blog Talk Radio for 10 years before that. And she's the first one that inspired me to say, hey, let's share this with 5 people. And then that'll snowball. So that's why, you know, the show, I always have that whole spiel about 5 people, right? Whether they like me or not. Okay, that's enough said. I'm going to interview my guest, Thomas. I hope I said his last name correctly, Mayor. Sometimes it's Mar, depending on the spelling. I'm really excited to have him on. This is something I didn't know about back during the Cold War time. You know, as far as Fidel Castro goes, I had no idea that this went down. And when I heard him on another show, I just thought it was so fascinating to hear the details of this and who was behind it and how it all played out. So I'm going to shut up now and bring him on, and he can tell you about himself, and then we'll take it from there and start rolling with this. Thomas, here we go. Hello, sir.
Hello there, Charlotte. How are you? Thank you so much for inviting me tonight.
I am so excited to have you on. Like I said in my initial letter, I grew up in Sacramento, California. My dad grew up in Cleveland in the 30s. So he knew all kinds of stories about the mobsters, and he would tell me and all this, and that's why I just had to have you on. Tell me about you, sir.
Well, I am a reporter who just retired from Newsday, which is the daily newspaper on Long Island, New York. I worked there for 40 years. I went to Columbia School of Journalism in New York. Mm-hmm. And 2 years ago, I won the Alumni Award. So essentially, I've been an investigative reporter my entire career. The other side gig, if you will, has mm-hmm. been writing books. And so fundamentally, I've been writing biographies about America in our time. Mm-hmm. And so I've written about the Newhouse Media Empire, which is the Condé Nast magazines and such. I wrote a book about Dr. Spock, the baby doctor. I wrote mm-hmm. 2 previous books about the Kennedys, one having to do about how their Irish Catholic immigrant experience informed their public and private lives. And the other book was about the Churchills and the Kennedys and the relationship between those 2 very well-known families. Probably the best-known book of mine thus far is Masters of Sex, which became a Showtime series for 4 years. It ran as a drama. It was an Emmy-winning series. It was about the researchers William Masters and Virginia Johnson, and there were tons of really talented people who were part of that. Michael Sheen and Lizzie Kaplan were the 2 stars, but Allison Janney was part of it. She won the Emmy for her role in Masters of Sex. There were a lot of other folks. Jeremy Strong, who was part of the last season, he was in Succession. A number of people, Bo Bridges, just a load of folks. And that's basically was my introduction into Hollywood as such, Hollywood. And during that time period, which was about 8-9 years ago, when Masters was on Showtime, I was approached about writing another book. And I mentioned it to one television producer who asked me, what are you doing next? And I said, well, I'm writing a book about 2 top gangsters who were hired by the CIA to kill Fidel Castro. And during the Cold War, and what happens with this absolutely fact-supported conspiracy by the CIA, and just the story of these 2 outlaw buddies, these gangsters that get hired by America's top spy agency to go and kill a foreign leader. And what happens to them is extraordinary. It's a big murder mystery at the end. But it was something that I thought would make a terrific show. And so, lo and behold, it's going to be on Paramount Plus. starting on July 16th, all six episodes
wow.
are going to appear on Paramount Plus. And then the following week, Showtime will be showing it one episode each week throughout the summer. So I'm hoping this becomes the summer of mafia spies.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
You've earned it. You've earned it. I was going to ask you about your career, because you did mention that you've been an investigative reporter for almost all of your career. What other beats have you covered?
Well, I've covered a lot of things over the years. Most recently, just before I left Newsday, I won a New York Emmy myself for a documentary I did about one of the longest running innocent man cases in America. It was a teenager who was charged and convicted of a murder here on Long Island that he absolutely did not commit. And we did a huge story and a documentary about it. And it coincided with this person, his name was Keith Bush, being exonerated by the authorities. So that was a truly dramatic, life-changing in a way, experience, certainly for Keith Bush. And in my own way, it taught me a lot of things. So that was something that I did. I went out to Michigan and investigated all of the death records involving Dr. Kevorkian. That's back in the 90s. I went to El Salvador and I won the top prize of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, which is the preeminent international investigative group. And so I won that top prize. And then 10 years later, with the same group, we investigated the international trade in human body parts that for things like knee surgery and such. There's a market, believe it or not, for human body parts. And sometimes the way those are obtained are quite questionable. And so we did something for that. And that won the National Society a professional journalist top award. So I had a lot of fun as a reporter, but fundamentally I wanted to concentrate the next 10, 20 years of my career towards writing books, doing television projects, and hopefully doing films.
Absolutely. So let's talk about this book, you know with the CIA involved with mobsters, literally to try and take out Castro. How did that come about that you wanted to look into that?
Well, as I mentioned, I had done a book about the Kennedys before. And also, as I also mentioned, that I had done, when I came up with this idea, I was in the throes of the TV show Masters of Sex at Showtime, and which was all about love and sex and human relations, kind of like on one end of the spectrum. And what Mafia Spies to me represented was a story about violence in all of its different forms, something that I had not written about really before. And Mafia Spies deals with state-sanctioned assassination, as I mentioned, the CIA trying to kill Castro. But you also had the Mafia and how of the two major characters in Mafia Spies, both of them employed murder as part of maintaining their power in terms of getting revenge on people, but also is very clinical. And yet, particularly the one character, Sam Giancana, who was the head of the Chicago mob, which is called the Outfit, which essentially controlled virtually everything west of the Mississippi in this country at that time, and I'm talking about the early 60s here, Giancana, to reinforce his power and maintain his power, had a number of different psychopathic killers who had torture chambers in their basements and such. There's some pretty gruesome murders that are recounted in Mafia Spies as well, as part of that whole mafia scene and such. So it was kind of an examination, in a way, of all American violence, which unfortunately is completely repulsive to me. but it is something that's a huge part of our society. And as somebody who's been writing about America in our times, certainly I felt that this was a good way. It was a very interesting subject. Uh-huh. And there's a lot of books about this time period, even novels by people like Norman Mailer and and a lot of other famous writers, but they usually read like term papers, not so much Mailer, but what I'm saying is they give it as history, but it's so complicated and there's so many characters. I think it's hard for people to really comprehend what's going on. So I found that the two characters, Johnny Roselli, who was the Chicago mob's man, who they sent out to Hollywood, and then he controlled things in Las Vegas, and also in Havana, Cuba. He's like essentially the main character, and the other character, as I already mentioned, Sam Giancana. And these two men were very different men, but they were buddies, and they go through this whole adventure, if you will, these outlaw buddies, these outlaw friends who are involved in this incredibly questionable venture of trying to kill a foreign leader and all the different things that they were involved in. I felt that was a good framework for telling this very complicated story, because you always stay with these two characters, and they are involved between the two of them in virtually all these aspects of whether or not we're talking about the CIA down in Florida, we're talking about what's going on in Washington with the top people in the CIA, in Las Vegas with the Rat Pack and Frank Sinatra and all those folks, in California, in Chicago where the mob, where Giancana oversees the mob, and down in Cuba where Castro has taken over and the mob and the CIA are trying to join forces to remove him from power in Cuba.
When you first started doing the research in here for this thing, how hard was it to find the information?
Well, there's been a lot written about it over the years, but bear in mind, this was a conspiracy that was quiet for about 12 to 15 years. It was launched, and there was a very few number of people that knew about what was going on. And then there were some top officials who kind of knew what was they did know what was going on, but they tried to keep somewhat of a distance from it. It didn't really start to come out and unravel until about the mid-1970s, almost about 15 years after it actually happened. And that's when the U.S. Senate began to look at what the CIA was doing. Part of it was because of the Watergate scandal and the way in which the Nixon administration had abused some of the intelligence services in the country, the FBI, the CIA. And there was hearings about the CIA. And that's when this came out, where they found out that there was a plot to kill Fidel Castro. And that raised a whole number of different questions, not the least of which had to do with somehow the CIA involvement with did this Castro plot at all lead, was it all involved with JFK's assassination? And there's not a definitive answer by that. But I think a lot of the research that I found, particularly documents that were released by President Trump in 2017 and 2018, he released them because they were mandated by Congress to do that by law. And so Trump released thousands of documents about the JFK assassination. I'm sure people remember that. It's about 5 years ago, just before COVID. Right. And in those papers, there's no real smoking gun about who killed JFK. Mm-hmm. But what a lot of those papers deal with is about the plot to kill Castro. And what's interesting about it, and I think what Mafia Spies really underlines, is two things. One is that the Warren Commission, when they looked at JFK's assassination, on the Warren Commission was Alan Dulles, who had been the head of the CIA, who sanctioned and oversaw a plot to kill Castro. And Castro in 1962 was letting it be known to the press, saying, I know the Americans are trying to kill me. And he basically warned that two people, you know, that two can play that game as well. And that's literally months before JFK was killed. But the Warren Commission never really thoroughly examined that plot because they didn't know, most of the members did not know about it. One member did, Alan Dulles, the man who launched that attempt. So when you're doing a murder investigation, but Murder Investigation 101 teaches you that you should try to identify all the suspects, and you should try to really do that within 72 hours. And of course, the leading suspect was Lee Harvey Oswald, who is pretty clearly actively engaged in killing JFK, was the assassin there. But if there was any others involved, we don't know about it, at least not from Lee Harvey Oswald, because he was killed within that 72 hours by Jack Ruby. But the Warren Commission never examined the whole CIA plot against Castro. And that was kept at bay. So that didn't come out until like 15 years later. And so I think that was one of the key things that I learned from these papers that were released 5 years ago. But the other extraordinary thing that I think mafia spies show is that the CIA essentially was running a war from Florida in the early 1960s for about 4 years or so in that time period, in which there were facilities set up by the CIA to train a number of Cuban exiles, people who had fled Castro's regime and wanted to get their homeland back, who were determined to get rid of Castro. And they were trained by the CIA in Florida and other places. Mm-hmm. And my two characters in this story, Johnny Roselli and Gene Khanna, they went down to Florida. They were involved, and particularly Johnny Roselli. Johnny Roselli went as far as getting in the boats in the middle of the night with some of these folks, and who went over, as I say, in the middle of the night, to Cuba and to try to meet other people in attempts to overthrow Castro and kill him. And so there's some really extraordinary scenes. There's one particular scene where Castro has forces are tipped off to this, and they're waiting for these boats that are coming from Florida, including Roselli and one of them. And they're waiting. They actually start shooting in the boat that Roselli's in. Takes on water, and he has to jump into another boat. And so all of this was happening, and there really was nothing in the press about it in the early 60s. So all this stuff, as I said, first started to come out with the Senate hearings in the 70s, but the new papers that were released about 5 years ago, after about being secret for 50, 60 years, they provided a lot of detail about what was going on in Florida, the fact that Castro apparently, it appears he had some informers and double agents in Florida. And that's one of the reasons why he knew where things were happening. He could anticipate. And it's one of the reasons why, despite many, many attempts to kill Castro, he never was killed and wound up dying as an old man close to age 90 only a few years ago.
So when the CIA decided to do this, I guess the mob's all around this, so I mean you could probably find somebody fairly easily. But at that point in time, I mean, you know, how did the CIA even present this? You know, excuse me, present the option to these two mobsters to ask them to go along with this?
Well, you know, let's just pull back for a moment here, and put ourselves in that time period. Although, you know, certainly there's a lot of parallels to what's going on today, but back in the late 50s, two big things happened. That there was this, as you mentioned, a Cold War going on with Russia. And the Russians sent up a satellite. They were the first ones in outer space. And that happened with the Sputnik satellite in 1957. And suddenly it really shook and rattled official Washington. The idea that maybe now the Russians could put a nuclear bomb on the top of one of these satellites and shoot it off. So that happened in 1957. And then shortly thereafter, Castro, who seemed as a reformer. In fact, a number of the papers in the United States, Ed Sullivan actually did interviews, for instance, with Castro, and they saw him as a reformer, getting rid of the dictator who had overseen things in Cuba. And it turns out that Castro really wasn't a reformer. What he was somebody who quickly became a communist, who was part of the Soviet sphere of influence. And very soon, the Soviets were looking to put nuclear missiles in Cuba, and that led to a major missile crisis in 1962. So those two things really rattled official Washington. And the decision was made in late 1959, early 60, during the Eisenhower administration, that they had to get rid of Castro. And it was decided that the CIA would do that. But the CIA wanted to not directly get their hands dirty in something like that. And so they had a buffer, a cutout was the term, a cutout in spying. That's the phrase. And the cutout in this case was a man named Robert Mayhew. And Mayhew worked for Howard Hughes, who at that time was the richest man in the United States. One of the things that Howard Hughes did was he was a government contractor. He'd been involved in Hollywood. But anyway, this fellow, Robert Mayhew, who was working for Hughes, was approached by a friend in the CIA. And they explained the situation to Mayhew. And Mayhew said, well, I think I know somebody who could do this for you in the mafia. And it turned out to be Johnny Roselli. Johnny Roselli is one of the most fascinating characters in the history of the American mob. He's a man who started in Boston. He came over with his family, got involved in trouble, worked as a very young man in the early 30s for Al Capone, suffered from tuberculosis. And so Roselli was sent out to Hollywood. And Johnny Roselli worked as the mob's fixer in Hollywood, both for the unions at times, also for some of the studio heads in Hollywood. He also got involved in Las Vegas, and as he was also involved with the mob's casinos in Cuba. So Roselli was an amazing character. His nickname was Handsome Johnny. And this was a guy who was like the quintessential bad boy for a lot of women in Hollywood in particular. It's remarkable who he dated. He dated Lana Turner. He dated Donna Reed, if you remember It's a Wonderful Life. She's the star of that. Now, he also met a woman named Judy Campbell, who had been married to an actress, Judy Campbell, who had been married to an actor. She just divorced him. And she kind of falls into the crowd of Johnny Roselli, Giancana, his pal Giancana, the Chicago mobster. And in Las Vegas, Judy Campbell winds up going out with Frank Sinatra, who's a big pal of these two gangsters, particularly Giancana. And eventually, Judy Campbell is introduced to a young senator by the name of John F. Kennedy, who's running for president. And so that's early 1960s. All of these things are going on at once. Right. The plot to kill Castro, and then in Las Vegas, all this type of stuff that's going on. And eventually, within about a span of about 2 years, it all comes crashing together, and in an extraordinary way. And so there's so many different aspects of the story. And yet, fundamentally, the Mafia Spies is about, I tell it through the story of the two gangsters. And I think that keeps it all together.
So when the CIA approached them, or allegedly approached them, to do this job, how did they receive that? I mean, were they more than willing to do this? Or was a lot of money being passed along the line?
Right. Well, it's amazing. Really, the first big meeting between the CIA and the Mafia, between Sam Giancana and Johnny Roselli, is at the Fountain Blue Hotel in Miami. This is where the first big meeting, the first sit down takes place. And Robert Mayhew, the cutout, is there as well. And essentially, Roselli has been offered $150,000 in 1960. That was a hell of a lot
That's
of money.
That's a lot of money, yeah.
Johnny said, no, I'm not going to take your money. We want to get rid of him. We'll do this because, and he said that he's a patriot. And he put this in patriotic terms. But they wouldn't accept the money. And so it was decided in this time period, I think it was around March of 1960, this meeting at the Fontainebleau Hotel. That same time period, Frank Sinatra is down there entertaining. In fact, one of the things that he's doing is putting together a TV special that Elvis is getting out of the army.
Right.
And they have this, you can go onto YouTube and actually find it. It's Sinatra and Elvis singing together. And that was all the same time period. Sinatra is also trying to hang out, and does hang out, with Sam Giancana when they're staying at the Fontainebleau Hotel. But it's decided during this meeting with the CIA and with Johnny and with Sam Giancana that they will go ahead. And they discuss, do we try to kill him with machine guns, kill Castro with machine guns? Do we try to with bazookas, all these other different things? And Giancana is the one who says, look, the best way to do this is to poison him. And so there's a number of attempts to poison Castro, and yet none of them work. And I detail all the attempts to kill Castro, or certainly many of the sure. highlights, if you will, of the attempts to kill Castro in Mafia Spies.
When you talk about his food, did he have people tasting his? I mean, how did he avoid it? Did he have people on staff that would taste his food for him? Because I know there's leaders that do that stuff.
You know, it's like a band of follies or crazy things where there were a lot of screw-ups, frankly. For instance, one of the most notable is that there was a woman named Marita Lorenz who they kind of recruited, the CIA recruited, and she had an affair with Castro. And she went back down to Cuba to see Castro. And what they did was they put poison in capsules. And they put those capsules in a jar of cold cream that she brought with her. And yet when the magic moment came, they were together in a bedroom and she excuses herself to go into the bathroom. What happens as she opens up the cold cream is that the capsules have melted in the cold cream. And so that doesn't work. There's another time in which there's poisons that are kept in the back of an old refrigerator, and they freeze up, and when the person tries to take it, it cracks, and that doesn't work, or so it was said. Just exactly how serious some of these folks that were involved in it, bear in mind, a lot of these folks were looking for money from the CIA. The CIA was spending a lot of money running this whole facility down in Florida, the attempts. And so they had offered $150,000 back then to Roselli and Giancana. So there were a number of people who I think were trying to have it both ways, who were essentially double agents. One of the key people in this was a gangster in Tampa by the name of Santo Trafficante. Now, he's involved in that Fontainebleau meeting early on, that first meeting, because he's a pal of Johnny and Sam Giancana in running the mob's casino down in Havana. Santo Trafficante speaks Spanish as well. He's based in Tampa. But he was also a drug trafficker. And that's how a lot of the money, much of his money, came from either gambling, but primarily drug trafficking and things of that nature. And so he looked like he wanted to kill Castro. But these papers that were released 5 years ago, I think what they show is that that Trafficante probably was a double agent, that Trafficante was the object of some suspicion by some of the later CIA agents who were involved in this, particularly a guy named William Harvey, who's known as the James Bond of the CIA. But he, when he came down to Florida, he started dealing with Johnny Roselli, who he did trust. He trusted Johnny Roselli, but he didn't trust Santo Trafficante. And he smelt the rat with Trafficante. And what happens with Trafficante at the end of my book, I think it would be a big surprise for both the readers and also for those who watch the TV show.
Absolutely. So you've set this up really well. You know, they tried to get out there by boat in the middle of the night, you know, to get over to Cuba. How were they able to get, I mean, like you say, it's probably poison, but how were they able to even get that stuff in around his guards? Because, I mean, he had to have had, you know, just a lot of guards, literally, like the president, right? Look, lots of guards around him.
They did. You know, there's one point where what they did was in these small rubber boats, they would come mm-hmm. with there was one incident where they came with a bazooka type of explosives and such. And when they tried to use them, they had been damped. And that was, or at least that was the story, is that they were too damped to use. But there was attempts to try to kill Castro at a major event like a parade and be able to shoot him from a long distance. Like I said, their original conversation was somehow, could you get up close to him and shoot him that way? The perception was that the safest way of doing it, and the way also of not having anybody caught and therefore pointing at the United States, right, was if you poison Castro. And so that was all during a period of about 4 years, starting in 1960 through about the end of 1964. That's when it ends.
Well, you would think Castro would have people, like I said earlier, that were his taste testers before he ate something.
And so he did. You know, it's from a sheer spying standpoint.
Right.
What happens with Castro is utterly fascinating. You know, the United States, for many years, we were not involved in the spying game. It's something that a Secretary of State once said, I think it was Secretary of State or Secretary of War, who said, gentlemen do not read other gentlemen's mail. So in other words, we don't spy on people. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have a spy agency really until World War II. And then after the end of World War II, we dismantled it. And about a year or two later, President Truman realized, no, we really do need a spy agency. And so that's when the CIA was created, around the late 1940s. But before us, there were plenty of spies. There's been spies throughout history, spy agencies, very well-developed organizations. Certainly, the Russians knew how to spy for more than 100 years, well more than 100 years. And they were aces at it. Somebody who also believed very much in spying and espionage and intelligence mm-hmm. was Winston Churchill, arguably our greatest ally in the 20th century. So it's something that we were very late to the game in doing. And so even when we did do it, we collected intelligence. And so we were kind of passive observers of the political situation in countries, the economic situation, and such. We didn't get involved in what is known as covert operations until this time that we're looking at here with mafia spies. There have been attempts to upset regimes, but the attempts to assassinate Fidel Castro was probably the most extreme example of a covert operation by the CIA up to that point, because of all of the alliances that Castro had already developed with the Russians. And as I said, with Castro, he's an extraordinary case study of somebody with not a lot of experience with spying, but once he comes into power and he's adopted by the Soviets. Right. They teach him how to set up a very intricate spying apparatus, not only in Cuba, but very quickly on, they're able to plant informants in Florida, and they provide information that helps Castro avoid assassination. And also, for instance, when the Bay of Pigs happens, Castro's forces essentially are waiting for them. This is when the Cuban exiles, this is in April of 1961, there's an attempt with Bay of Pigs to invade that area known as the Bay of Pigs in Cuba. And Castro's forces are just waiting for them. You know, in the show, Mafia Spies on Paramount Plus, that starts on July 16th, the first episode helps take people by the hand and explain the historical, that sets it up, as you said, and explains all that was going on. And for me, as a book writer, and in terms of what's new that I was able to find, I was really surprised the extent of the secret war that was being run in the Miami area that most Americans had no idea about. And that was a big part of the story of these two gangsters.
Well, what do you think about what you just said, too, is, you know, there's always this stuff going on. We don't realize it's going on until way after the fact. But I just find it interesting that with all the technology the U.S. had, you know, all the trainees, you know, Navy SEALs, whatever you want to call it, they decided to like get the mob involved to take him out.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, I've been an investigative reporter all my life. And so when I do investigations, I like to have documents. I like to have receipts, if you will. And so the back of my book has more than 600 footnotes with documents and court testimony and Senate testimony and such. And so, you know, I even found out from one of those documents that became available 5 years ago, found out the CIA code number for Johnny Roselli, the main character in Mafia Spies. So, you know, by putting all that stuff together, it was like putting together a jigsaw puzzle. And I think what we're trying to do, both with my book and with the show on Paramount and Showtime, that we're trying to take people by the hand and explain to them what all this meant through the window of these two gangsters. And so in that sense, I think it's both entertaining, but it's also, it's taking your history in a fun and entertaining way. It's you're learning something, and it's also all based on fact. That's a really important thing, that Mafia Spies is based upon fact. And in fact, the CIA ultimately acknowledged in 2007, they released documents and they acknowledged that they had tried to kill Castro. It was in a huge document that was known as the Family Jewels. That was the nickname for it, the Family Jewels. And it revealed a lot of old secrets from the CIA. And there it was, how the CIA hired Johnny Roselli and Sam Giancana to try to kill Castro.
My mouth just doesn't want to work good today. Don't know why. Were there any hearings or anything held afterwards, you know, after the fact, after all that failed?
Oh, yeah. So, like, in the 1970s, this stuff really came to the surface. There were a number of stories. Also, bear in mind, there was a big secret that happened with Johnny Roselli that helped, to some extent, propel these hearings. And it's this. Johnny Roselli is not his real name. I don't know if you ever watched that show, Mad Men. Don Draper, and it was not his real name. He had a different alias. Well, Johnny Roselli, that's not his real name. Johnny spent his whole life as Johnny Roselli, and sometimes he changed even the spelling with Roselli, sometimes with one S or sometimes with two S's, as if he was trying to escape detection. Right. But Johnny's real name was Filippo Sacco. He was an illegal immigrant from Italy whose family had come over. And when he got in trouble, when he went out to Chicago, he changed his name. And in fact, one of the things that I find amazing about Johnny Roselli is that, you know, he didn't come up with the name John Smith or John Doe or something like that. Came up with Roselli because he a very smart guy, was an admirer of a Vatican painter, Cosimo Roselli, I believe the name was. Nice. And so he took on the name Roselli, changed his name from Filippo Sacco to Johnny Roselli. And he went through a whole life. He went to Hollywood. He spent his whole career there. And yet the FBI was running after, at the same time that Johnny and Sam were trying to help the CIA, mm-hmm. the FBI was running after them, trying to put them in jail. Because they were gangsters and killers and involved a lot of illegal activities. So they eventually, the FBI finds out the real name of Johnny Roselli through its own investigations. There's a whole story that's outlined in my book, Mafia Spies, about that. But so in, and this all comes to a head in around the late 60s, early 70s. And so the FBI confronts him with his real name. And they tell him, we're going to deport you. We're going to send you out of this country. You're here illegally. And they had done that with other gangsters. They deported them. And Johnny felt, well, if I'm deported, I'll wind up getting murdered. It's a death sentence. So what he does is that he suggests through his lawyer, he tells the Senate investigators that he knows not only stuff about what he had done, he personally had done with the CIA plot to assassinate Castro, but he also dangles the idea that he knows something about the JFK assassination. And it's around that time period in the mid-1970s where America began to have doubts about who killed JFK. And so they were very interested in it. But before Johnny could tell what he knew, if any of that was true, we'll never know, because Johnny was murdered. He was fished out of the bay not too far from the Fontainebleau Hotel in the waters there. His body was found in a 55-gallon barrel. And his story, what he may not have known, if he truly did know anything about the JFK assassination, we'll never know, because he was murdered. In a similar way, Sam Giancana was subpoenaed to testify before the Senate in 1975. There were two investigators, staff investigators, who flew out to Chicago to try to prep them and, you know, essentially get a story so they would be prepared for a hearing with the senators. And that night, Giancana had friends and family over. One of his daughters came over. They all went home after dinner around 10 o'clock. They left. And Sam was having a little snack for himself. He had like a man cave in his house. This is in the suburbs of Chicago, Oak Park. And somebody that night comes in and with a silencer on a gun shoots Giancana 6 times, I believe it was, most of the shots around his mouth, which was basically the mob's way of saying, if you talk, if you talk like this guy was going to, you'll wind up just like he was, dead. And so that was a big shock to the Senate investigators, needless to say. That was front page news when it happened. The story and who killed Sam and who killed Johnny remains unsolved to this day. But I think if you read carefully in Mafia Spies with some of the documents that I found, I think I have a pretty good idea of who was responsible for both murders.
Interesting. Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that. I mean, I read half your book. To be honest, I only got through half of it. But it is a great book. It's a great read. And the plot is so interesting in that who would have figured, that the CIA would be involved enough to say, hey, can you go take Castro out for us? And the dealing with the mob. Is the mob infiltrated in our government?
Well, at this point, in 1960, this was something that a lot of the people in the CIA, they didn't want to get involved with this. Most of the heads of the CIA, these were people who went to the finest universities in the country. Alan Dulles, who was the head of the CIA at that time, he went to Princeton. The number two guy who was directly involved in overseeing this, Richard Bissell, he went to Yale. A lot of the CIA agents came out of the World War II era, they had Ivy League degrees. So they didn't want to get involved in stuff like this. And so getting involved with the mob, they had, as I mentioned, to have a buffer. They had this guy, Robert Mayhew. He was the intermediary between the CIA and the mafia. So they were willing to do the dirty deed. They just didn't want to have their names on it.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. What did you find? I know you talked earlier about what surprised you about, you know, the information you did for the research, and you know, what your main surprise was. Is there something else that surprised you in all this?
Oh yeah, there was a lot of different things. One of the things that I was really intrigued about doesn't really have to do directly with the conspiracy to kill Castro, but it had to do with the friendship of these two gangsters, Johnny Roselli and Sam Giancana. They were two very different men. As I mentioned, Johnny was kind of like a Casanova character. And Giancana, though, was kind of a traditional, almost like a Tony Soprano type, a guy who was married, he had three teenage daughters, and yet something happened in his family. Mm-hmm. His wife dropped dead of a heart attack, screaming at one of their kids. Now, I'm sure it's very hard to imagine by parents ever screaming at their children. I have three sons, far be it from mine to ever yell at them. But that's what happens. And so when Sam's wife drops dead like this, he's really thrown off because he put her up on a pedestal. He adored his wife. And the people that put him in power in Chicago, that when he took over the reins of the Chicago mob, they said, don't be like Al Capone. Don't be like a John Gotti later on. In other words, a mobster who loves the limelight, who loves everything. We want you to keep a low profile because otherwise the FBI is going to do the same thing to you that they did to Capone. They don't like that. They're going to go after you if you attract attention. Keep it low. And what happens is Gene kind of does just the opposite. When his wife dies, he winds up hanging out in Las Vegas with Johnny Roselli, the Casanova type. And Johnny's introducing him to all these actresses. Sam finds a new love, singer Phyllis McGuire, who is part of a very well-known group, singing group in America at that time period, the McGuire sisters. And so suddenly he's having his picture taken in all the papers like that. So that the relationship of the two buddies, the two mobster buddies, I thought were really interesting how different they were. And they were like archetypes are what they call it. You know, two very different types of men. The relationship with Sinatra and the Rat Pack, particularly in Las Vegas, but also then ultimately with the Kennedy connection, that I found absolutely fascinating. I thought that when you look at the history of Sinatra, and I am a big fan of Sinatra's music, I think he's one of the great musical artists of the 20th century. Uh-huh. You know, no question about
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Extraordinary singer. But when you look at the history of Sinatra, you know, in the 1940s, he has a very, very sweet voice. In the 50s, he adopts kind of more of a gangster type of thing. In fact, some of the today's rappers and gangster music types, they see the Rat Pack and they see Sinatra. It's kind of an early predecessor to what they're doing.
Right, right.
And a lot of that, right down to the way they were dressing with their hats and such, was influenced by Giancana. Frank's relationship with Giancana, they actually were business buddies in a casino on the border of California and Nevada. So I was intrigued how Giancana had influenced Sinatra in his art there. And And it's interesting that I play with that in my book, but also in the Paramount series that comes out July 16th. We have a well-known biographer of Sinatra who wrote a terrific two-part biography. And he talks about the relationship of Giancana with Sinatra in that time period. So I thought that was really interesting, that whole Las Vegas era. And I was also surprised the extent to which Bobby Kennedy, who was then the Attorney General, how much he was involved in overseeing the CIA operation down in Florida, and how he was often criticizing the CIA directors and pushing them, as they later testified, pushing them to get rid of Castro. And so I was surprised by a number of different things. I guess the last thing that I thought was most interesting, and I think Mafia Spies provides a little bit of a different take on these things, has to do with this character, Judy Campbell, who's introduced to this world. It's a young woman, California, who Johnny Roselli meets. He brings her to Las Vegas. He has dated her. He introduces to Frank Sinatra, who in turn introduces her to JFK. This is in during the 1960, early part of that camp, the early 1960 campaign, during a stopover by Kennedy in Las Vegas. And he's introduced to Campbell, and they begin an affair that carries through to the White House. There's literally something like 60 or 70 different phone messages, phone calls that were made by Campbell, who later was known as Judith Campbell Exner. But at that time, she was Judy Campbell. And so I was very interested in Judy Campbell as a young woman, kind of like a Monica Lewinsky, in the sense of a young woman who gets involved in a crowd that's much deeper. The waters are much darker and swifter than I think she realized what she was getting into.
Right.
And bear in mind, she's getting involved with the top mobster in the country, with one of the top Hollywood fixers in the country, and one of the great artists in the country, Frank Sinatra, and ultimately with the President of the United States. And then what happens to her, and how Johnny Roselli comes to her rescue, if you will, or at least helps her get through things, and what happens there, and what she claims about that. I thought that was really intriguing. Particularly, I looked at Judy Campbell in Mafia Spies through the prism of today. So that, in other words, when her name first came out, it was like she was just another floozy, or this is how it was presented, something like that. I think now, particularly with the Monica Lewinsky example that we lived through, the Clinton years, but also even with the Me Too prism that we've seen in the last 5 or 6 years, and powerful men with younger women who are feel they've been manipulated or are kind of danced around and such. I think Judy Campbell is viewed in my book in that regard. And so I think that's something that's new as well.
Absolutely fascinating. This hour blew by. And I want to thank you for coming on. I so appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Charlotte, for inviting me. I really appreciate it. And if I may just say, July 16th, Paramount, Paramount Plus, Mafia Spies, all 6 parts of it drop on the streamer there. And then Showtime, the following week on July 23rd, will begin showing 6 parts over the one part every week over throughout the rest of the summer. I hope that people get the chance to watch Mafia Spies. It's got clips from The Godfather in it. And this, the person who actually plays Johnny Roselli was also an actor in The Sopranos. So it's got a kind of a gangland lineage, if you will. And
Absolutely.
So I think it's a terrific show, and I really urge people to tune in.
How can people find you, sir?
I'm sorry?
How can people find you?
Well, my name is Thomas Mayer, M-A-I-E-R, and you can find me at thomasmayerbooks.com. That's my website, and a lot of stuff about Mafia Spies is on that website. And there's a new book a new updated book with 16 pages of color photos from the TV show that are now there. And it's the cover art that's now the cover from my book, Mafia Spies. And that's already out there. It just came out. And so that's, they call that the TV tie-in book for the Paramount show. And it's got a new update about how the TV show was made. And it's got photos from the show itself.
Fantastic. Once again, thank you so much. I'd love to have you on a later date to talk about your those other books you have.
Great. Thank you so much, Charlotte.
All right, sir. You have a great rest of your evening.
You too. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you. Okay. Well, that was a really good interview. I always learn something, and that's the key to all this. It's a learning process. I apologize. My allergies are just horrible. My eyes are hurting. Everything. I ache. It's just craziness. During the show, and you can tell I'm kind of off on my questions and stuff too, because I'm just so stuffed up and puffy, head feeling puffy and all that. But I'm glad you guys got to join me tonight. Tomorrow night, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, we'll be back here, and it's going to be spooky. It's going to be Spooky Thursday. This woman that's going to be on tomorrow night, Miss Spooky Miss Teehee. Teehee. She was on another show, and I heard her tell a very, very, very spooky story that she and her husband both experienced. But what struck me about the spookiness of it was that Stephen King, when he first started writing, didn't use his name. There's a particular book out of short stories. And one of these stories in this book reminded me of tomorrow's guest story that she told. And so that's why I wanted to have her on. But she has several ghost stories that she's going to share with us, allegedly true ghost stories. So buckle down for that tomorrow. Like it says, get your popcorn and snacks and drink your favorite beverage, whether it's a cocktail or whatever, and join me tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. And hopefully my allergies will be under control again, because today has been a horrible allergy day. All right, if you like the show, share it with 5 people. If you hated the show, share it with 5 of your enemies. We're equal opportunity here. Just trying to get the word out of our little old show. Thank you for being in the chat room, Marisa. I appreciate it. And I will see you guys tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. Pacific. Have a great evening.